Chapter 10, Maximizing Your Mental Energy with Habits. How can you make daily visits to classrooms not just an occasional activity, but a consistent habit? As with any project, it starts with budgeting key resources. As an instructional leader, your most valuable resources are time and mental energy. It's critical to ensure that you're allocating enough time and mental energy to your practice of visiting classrooms, but often these resources are sapped by the other demands of your role. As we'll explore in this chapter, research has uncovered a surprising link between habits and mental energy that can help you harness the mental energy you need to make it into classrooms daily. In this chapter, we will learn how patterns become habits, understand how habits work, see why habits matter, learn how to conserve mental energy with habits, and discover 5 ways to change habits. Learn how patterns become habits. As we've discussed in the last few chapters, pre-planning how you'll spend your time is essential for prioritizing your work effectively, which makes it far easier to get into classrooms. You'll never get into classrooms if you wait until there's nothing else to do. You'll always have unfinished tasks that compete with the work of visiting classrooms and talking with teachers. If you don't plan ahead and instead decide moment by moment what most deserves your time and attention, you'll naturally gravitate to low-priority, high-urgency tasks. Planning your day ahead of time by using your task management app and calendar saves you from making decisions throughout the day about what matters at any given moment. As you engage in this planning process day after day, you'll start to realize what works for you and what tends not to work. In large part, these patterns reflect your habits. The better your habits, the more productive you'll be. Researchers estimate that more than 40% of what we do in any given day is driven by habits, Duhigg 2012. From brushing your teeth, to driving to work, to microwaving your lunch, habits govern most of the predictable aspects of your day. Habits also govern many of your responses to situations that arise unpredictably throughout the day, such as staff members asking, "Got a minute?" Yet most of the time, we form habits accidentally rather than intentionally. We fall into patterns based on what we do the first time we encounter a situation or what we've seen others do. We thus stumble into most of the decisions that govern nearly half of our lives. What's more, the demands that school leaders face condition us to be reactive. Mintzberg, 1973. Others expect us to respond as needs arise, even if it means disrupting our plans. We become accustomed to interruptions, so we learn to be flexible and adaptable. Yet we still rely heavily on habits, just not habits we've chosen on purpose. Understand how habits work. According to Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Charles Duhigg, 2012, author of The Power of Habit, there are 3 essential components to any habit. First is the cue, the stimulus that triggers a near-automatic response. Just about anything can serve as a cue. Cues can be internal or external, tangible and obvious, or subtle and invisible. Common types of cues include chronological cues, such as the time of day or elapsed time, emotions, such as anger or happiness, physical sensations, such as hunger or fatigue, environmental cues, such as temperature and lighting, tool-based cues, such as alarms and reminders, interpersonal cues, such as facial expressions, tone, or words, criterion-based cues, such as standards, checklists, or rubrics, and instrument-based cues, like the reading on a speedometer or gas gauge. As you can see, we can manage some of these cues, but others simply occur outside of our control. The second part of the habit loop is the sequence, which is our response to the cue. When your alarm clock goes off, cue, you may respond by hitting the snooze button, sequence. Since many cues are unavoidable, the sequence is our clearest opportunity to modify our habits. For example, if you want to stop hitting the snooze button, you can turn off your alarm the first time it goes off and start getting ready for the day. The third phase of the habit loop is the reward, which creates a powerful sense of anticipation that drives your behavioral response to the cue. Hitting the snooze button gives you the reward of a few more minutes of sleep. Eating a snack gives you the reward of feeling satisfied instead of hungry. Because your brain has been conditioned to anticipate the reward, you start to experience the pleasure of the reward before you've even earned it, and this pleasure compels you to carry out the sequence, even if the sequence itself is difficult or unpleasant. Understanding this 3-part cycle, cue, sequence, reward, and the anticipation mechanism that ties it together allows us to modify our habits to increase our effectiveness. For a further discussion on ways to modify habits, see Discover 5 Ways to Change Habits, page 91. As you consider these strategies, think about the habits you currently employ to get through the day, and identify habits that you may need to modify or replace in order to get into classrooms every day. See why habits matter. Habits carry us through much of the day by occurring on autopilot, so we can conserve our mental energy for the aspects of our work that need it most. Throughout the day, we encounter many situations that demand our mental energy, such as thinking critically about what we see in a classroom observation, triaging problems as they arise, and dealing with emotionally challenging situations. Baumeister and Tierney, 2011. We handle some of these situations ad hoc, that is, by making decisions as they arise, and some by habit. Because they're deeply ingrained, habits require less cognitive effort to carry out successfully. As athletes well know, practice leads to automaticity. This automaticity has several sources. One is the muscle memory that we develop as we master any physical task, such as throwing a baseball or driving a car. Our brains still tell our muscles what to do, but with so little conscious thought that it truly feels automatic. Automaticity also comes from learned routines that we mentally chunk together to reduce their cognitive load. If you make coffee at home every morning, you've likely become accustomed to your particular coffee maker and can brew a pot without even thinking about all the steps, changing the filter, measuring the grounds, adding water, and so on. You know exactly how to operate your coffee maker, and you know exactly where everything is. But when you're away from home, using an unfamiliar coffee maker, everything is harder. You must search for the coffee and filters, and you must devote extra attention to figuring out how to operate the coffee maker. If you've ever noticed how the most basic daily routines seem to take longer when you're on vacation and leave you feeling surprisingly tired, you've experienced what researchers call ego depletion. Baumeister and Tierney, 2011. In their book, Willpower, Rediscovering the Greatest Human Strength, researcher Roy F. Baumeister and journalist John Tierney, 2011, explained that what we call mental energy is in fact a measurable and finite capacity, which they term willpower. As this energy wanes throughout the day, we enter a state of ego depletion when we have exhausted our mental energy and our willpower drops precipitously. In our ego-depleted state, we don't feel like doing challenging work, just as you might feel late at night. But ego depletion is different from physical exhaustion. It can occur at any time of day based on a number of factors. Baumeister's research has found, through a series of brilliant experiments, that rest, glucose, and other factors have a positive impact on our willpower. Baumeister and Tierney, 2011. As you might expect, being tired or hungry tends to reduce your willpower, but there are other, more surprising factors too, and these factors are relevant for our work as instructional leaders. First, emotional self-regulation is a major contributor to ego depletion. If you're in a verbal confrontation with a parent or student, keeping your cool is the way to keep your job, but it will take a toll on your mental energy for the day. Letting your emotions show may result in less ego depletion, but the consequences are usually not worth the cost. Second, and perhaps more surprising, is Baumeister's finding that repeated decision-making is a major contributor to ego depletion, even if the decisions are exceedingly minor. Baumeister and Tierney, 2011. Tasks as simple as filing papers and emails into folders can rapidly deplete your mental energy because they require so many small decisions. But there's a workaround. Habits don't involve actively making a decision in the moment, since you have already made the decision and turned it into an automatic response. So anything we do by habit will exact very little cost in terms of mental energy. These nuances of the research on ego depletion may not be widely understood in our society, but it's easy to identify practical examples. The late Steve Jobs of Apple, who sported his famous black turtlenecks at nearly every public appearance, wasn't just making a fashion statement. He was eliminating a decision, what to wear, from his schedule each morning so he could devote more of his mental energy to running a multi-billion dollar company. Another example is the familiar experience of feeling overwhelmed in a new job. New teachers, for example, may feel overwhelmed by the sheer number of decisions they must make, and total exhaustion is the norm at the end of the day. Over time, these decisions become habitual responses, and the job becomes somewhat less exhausting as teachers gain experience. When there's a new curriculum, a new group of students, or a change in the schedule, though, the added cognitive burden of additional decision-making takes a toll on willpower. Knowing what affects our willpower, and knowing that habits are a workaround for conserving willpower, how can we purposefully deploy habits to maximize our effectiveness? In the following section, we'll explore several strategies for modifying your day so you can devote your mental energy to your most important work. Conserve mental energy with habits. If we want to both conserve energy for what matters most and ensure that we're highly effective in everything we do, we can't merely continue to follow the habits we've developed by default. We must design and construct the habits we need. If you've wondered how you can find the mental energy to get into classrooms on a daily basis, in addition to the work that's already pushing you to your limits, habits are the answer. What changes might we make to optimize our habits? First, the simplest and highest impact habit change you can make immediately is to shift low-level decision-making to the end of the day. Scheduling, processing non-urgent emails, and updating your task management app can all wait until the end of the day, after you've completed your most cognitively demanding work, such as visiting classrooms and talking with teachers. The work itself may be cognitively demanding, but merely processing messages and to-do items in your inboxes isn't as demanding. Remember, if you separate deciding from doing, you'll make better, faster decisions, and you'll be more focused and less fatigued while you're actually doing the work. This habit has two key components. One, deciding not to do low-level decision-making at your peak times in the day, and two, deciding when you'll do it instead. You may elect to process email and tasks right before you leave for the day, or you may prefer to catch up later in the evening before bed. Whatever you do, shift the bulk of this high-volume, low-cognition decision-making out of your morning so it's not triggering ego depletion too early in the day. The second way to leverage habits is to create rewarding benchmarks or daily goals for yourself. If you commit to emptying your email inbox every evening and emptying your voicemail before lunch each day, sticking to these habits will start to provide mental rewards. Your brain will experience a rush of dopamine each time your inbox reads zero messages, and this will reinforce the habit, Duhigg 2012. Similarly, when you establish a daily goal of 3 classroom visits, you'll experience a mental reward when you reach your goal. These small rewards can help offset the natural tendency to avoid challenging work and can create a sense of productive momentum that carries you through the day. Now that we have an idea of how habits function and how they can help us optimize our use of mental energy, we'll look at 5 ways we can shape our habits. Discover 5 ways to change habits. The first and most direct way to change your habits is to replace the sequence. All you need is a personal rule that you can apply whenever the situation arises. For example, if I feel hungry, I'll eat a fiber bar instead of a cookie. So, if you're hungry, cue, instead of a cookie, eat a fiber bar, sequence, and you'll still feel satisfied, reward. If this substitution actually works, it can be very easy to change a habit, Duhigg 2012. For example, if you find that you're wasting time at your desk in the afternoons instead of getting into classrooms, you can identify the cue, time of day, reward, feeling accomplished, and the sequence you want to change, doing office work. Then, simply replace the sequence with a better alternative, getting into classrooms. Too often, though, the new sequence doesn't result in quite the same reward. If your healthy snack isn't as tasty as the cookies you're used to, it'll be hard to break your cookie habit. If you enjoy the mental break you get from doing busy work in the office, it'll be hard to develop a habit of visiting classrooms in the afternoon instead. In other words, if the sequence doesn't trigger the same rewards, it won't create a sense of anticipation next time the cue arises, and it'll have no habit-forming power at all. So we need a few more strategies to optimize our habits. The second way to modify your habits is to disrupt the routine. This works especially well for habits with ever-present cues but weak rewards. For example, if you find that you get drawn into answering email or doing other work at your desk every time you stop by the office, instead of getting into classrooms, you can make it impractical to sit at your desk by, say, having your administrative assistant put a sign marked "Classrooms" on your chair every time you have class visits scheduled on your calendar. When you see the sign, your habitual response of sitting down and doing some office work will be disrupted, and you can start to form a new habit of obeying your calendar. The third way to change habits is to alter the reward equation. What if you have an unhelpful habit, such as leaving your cluttered desk and inbox for tomorrow, that gives you a short-term reward? If you get to go home without thinking about the mess you're leaving behind, you're obtaining a mental reward that you will need to offset somehow. You might obtain a natural reward from getting everything cleaned up and organized for the next day, but this may be less tempting than the easier route of leaving the mess for tomorrow. you can alter this balance by tying a negative consequence to the undesirable routine. For example, you could leave a $20 bill pinned to your bulletin board and let your custodian know to take it if your desk is a mess when he or she empties your trash at night. The fourth way to change habits is to remove the cue. This works well for environment or tool-based cues. For example, if your phone is set to buzz each time you receive an email, you may get distracted from your classroom visits. Turning off this alert will remove the cue so you have fewer distractions. And if you tend to spend 15 minutes on email every time you sit down at your desk, simply avoid sitting at your desk whenever it's almost time to get into classrooms. The fifth way to change habits is to preempt the cue with another habit. Some cues may be inevitable, but if you already have another, more powerful sequence in motion, you may be immune to the unhelpful habit loop. For example, if you know staff members will pop by your office with "got a minute" queries right before school starts, preventing you from greeting students as they arrive, develop a habit of going outside to greet students a bit earlier. Get ahead of your predictable bad habit cues, and you can spend more of your day engaged in purposeful activity. The reason most instructional leaders aren't conducting hundreds of classroom visits per year is that they simply haven't developed the necessary habits. We develop habits gradually, by default, and we come to accept them as normal, inevitable parts of life. As you've seen in this chapter, though, habits have well-defined elements that we can manage and control to achieve more of what we want professionally. Day 10 Action Challenge: Inventory Your Habits. Identify the key habits that impact your ability to get into classrooms consistently. You may want to consider the following questions for reflection. What do I most enjoy about visiting classrooms? How can I build these rewards into every visit? What habits prevent me from getting into classrooms? What triggers these habits? How can I alter the cues, sequences, or rewards to create more effective replacement habits? Continue your visits to 3 classrooms per day, and as you do, look for ways to align your other habits with this key high-performance instructional leadership habit.